Hey everyone, welcome back. We're doing a deep dive today, and this one's going to be a little different.
Yeah, a little bit of a legal deep dive this
Yeah,
time.
we're looking at a lawsuit
That's
filed by
new.
David Edward Smith
Interesting guy.
against, well, a
Yeah.
whole bunch of people and agencies in the U.S.
The
government.
CDC, the
Department of
DEA.
Justice. Yeah, it's a big list,
It
and we're going right
is.
to the source for this one. We're
Absolutely.
using the actual lawsuit document itself.
So we're going to be getting into some pretty in-depth stuff
Yeah,
here.
this isn't just legal jargon, though. You know, this is really one man's story
It
about
is.
how these big policies, how changes that the government makes
Right.
actually trickle down and affect people's lives in a very
In a very real way.
real way. Yeah.
Yeah. And it really gives you a sense of the challenges people face when they feel like these policy shifts have really negatively impacted their lives.
Yeah.
And, and what avenues they have to actually, try to seek some kind of recourse
Right.
for
So
them.
David Edward Smith, he has a really complex medical history.
He does, yeah. 18-level spinal fusion,
Yeah.
arachnoiditis, carta equina syndrome.
Yeah, so he was really relying on opioid medication
Yeah.
to manage his pain
To function,
and
really.
just to function day to day.
Yep.
And it's important to point out here
Yeah.
that he is not alone.
Not by a long shot.
No, the CDC estimates that
It's a staggering number, actually.
yeah, somewhere between 19 and 70 million adults in the U.S. are living with chronic pain.
Millions and millions of people dealing with this.
That's a huge number of people.
It is, and it really underscores, I think, the importance of having a system in place that addresses pain management in a way that's thoughtful and that takes into account individual needs, medical situations, the whole picture,
Right.
not just a one-size-fits-all approach.
So Smith was living in California. Managing his pain, things were relatively stable.
He had a system that was working for him.
Right. Then he had to move to Texas to take care of his elderly mother.
Makes sense. Family comes first.
Yeah, so he's like, all right, I'm going to move to Texas. I'll just continue my treatment plan there. You know, seems reasonable.
Yeah, he'd think it would be straightforward.
Right. But it wasn't that simple.
And this is where those 2016 CDC guidelines really come into play.
Oh, yeah.
They were presented as recommendations for prescribers, but it turns out they ended up having this much broader impact
Okay.
than I think anyone anticipated.
So what happened?
Well, states, medical boards all over the country, they started using these guidelines as the basis for laws and regulations,
Oh, wow.
even though some of the guideline authors themselves came out and said, hey, wait a minute.
Wow.
These are being misapplied,
You're
misinterpreted.
kidding.
They weren't meant to be used this way.
So they created these guidelines and
Yeah.
then they kind of took on a life of their own. And
Exactly.
Smith got caught right in the middle of that.
He was caught in the crosshairs.
So he went to
Incredibly, went to five.
five different pain management clinics in Texas,
Five different
trying to get
clinics
his prescriptions filled, get his medication.
trying to continue the treatment that had been working for him. And every single time,
Yeah.
same response, we can't prescribe you those medications.
Wow.
The Texas Medical Board had essentially adopted the CDC guidelines as hard and fast rules,
Wow.
even for patients like Smith, who had a long history
Right.
of needing these medications, severe documented conditions.
It makes you think, like, should medical boards have that much power?
That's a huge question.
Yeah, to interpret and implement guidelines, especially when those guidelines have such a
Such a direct impact and such a potentially life-altering impact.
on patients.
Yeah, for sure.
And Smith's story really shows us how those decisions that are made, you know, way up high can play out in someone's life and really have a negative effect. So imagine being cut off from the only medication that helps you function.
It's hard to even fathom.
And that's what happened to him.
Yeah, he went through forced withdrawal.
Oh my
His
gosh.
pain became
It's
unbearable.
hard to even imagine.
He lost his job, his home, everything. He ended up having to file for bankruptcy.
It's just
It's a
devastating.
domino effect.
Yeah.
One thing leads to another, and it just spirals.
And all because he moved to a different state.
It's a cautionary tale about the unintended consequences of policy decisions.
And it's not even the whole story.
Right.
Smith's lawsuit makes this pretty shocking claim.
Yeah, it's a bombshell, really.
He says that the CDC already knew back in 2016
As far back as 2016.
that illicit fentanyl, not prescription opioids, was the main driver of those rising overdose deaths.
That's a huge claim.
Yeah, so if that's true, why wasn't that information shared more widely?
Right. Why did they keep pushing these guidelines that were seemingly targeting
Yeah.
the wrong problem?
Yeah. It's a head scratcher, for sure. Yeah.
If policymakers were working with bad information, incomplete information, inaccurate information about what was really causing this increase in overdoses,
Yeah.
well, then it stands to reason that the solutions they came up with.
Might not have been the right solution.
Might have missed the mark.
Yeah.
Might have even created new problems.
And then there's this whole system for determining dosage limits.
Right, the MME chart.
The MME chart, that's morphine milligram equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
And Smith argues that this chart is way too simplistic.
It's trying to take something very complex and boil it down to a single number.
Right.
It's like trying to, you know, diagnose someone's entire health based on their temperature alone.
Right. It doesn't account for the fact that everyone's body.
Everyone's different.
Reacts differently to medication.
Metabolism, genetics, you name it.
Yeah.
It's all different.
So if the CDC was aware of this issue with fentanyl, why were such strict guidelines implemented?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
And this is where another player enters the picture.
Okay.
Prop Physicians for Responsible Opioid Prescribing.
Okay.
They're a pretty influential advocacy group.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been pushing for tighter regulations on opioids for quite some time.
So they've been a big voice in this whole conversation.
Like major voice, yeah.
And it's important to understand their perspective. But like we mentioned, there are those allegations of conflicts of interest.
Right.
With some of their members potentially profiting from lawsuits.
Yeah, against opioid manufacturers.
Yeah, so that definitely raises some questions about their motivations.
It does.
And whether patient safety is really their only focus.
Right, it's about following the money sometimes.
Yeah, and their stance on chronic pain patients using opioids is...
It's certainly sparked debate.
It has, yeah.
Their president, Dr. Kolodny, he stated that millions of pain patients taking opioids as prescribed actually have opioid use disorder.
That's a pretty big statement.
It is, yeah. And it's a very controversial one.
Yeah.
Even some of the authors of the DSM pain, you know, the manual,
right,
used to diagnose mental health conditions,
yeah,
disagree with that statement.
So it makes you wonder how we even determine what constitutes addiction.
Right.
Especially when someone is taking these medications for a legitimate medical reason.
Yeah. Are we mistaking physical dependence,
mm-hmm,
which can happen with lots of different medications,
yeah,
for true addiction?
It's a really tricky question.
It is. And it has real consequences, mm-hmm, for people who are dealing with chronic pain,
mm-hmm,
because you have this situation now where doctors are afraid,
yeah,
of losing their licenses,
right,
of facing legal action.
Mm-hmm.
So they're becoming more and more reluctant to prescribe opioids,
yeah,
even to patients who have been stable on these medications, yeah, for years.
Right.
And it's created this, what some people are calling a pain refugee crisis.
A pain refugee crisis. Wow.
Yeah. You have patients who are desperately searching,
wow,
for doctors who are willing to treat them.
Heartbreaking.
It is.
To hear the stories of people who are being abandoned by their doctors.
Yeah.
And left to deal with this excruciating pain.
Without any support.
Without any support, yeah.
It's a really tough situation.
And Smith's lawsuit is full of these stories.
It is. It's full of heartbreaking stories.
He talks about an open heart surgery patient.
Yeah.
Who died because doctors were too afraid.
Too afraid to prescribe the attacks.
To give him adequate pain relief.
Pain medication.
And a 4-year-old girl.
It's just awful.
Who was denied medication after a liver transplant.
I mean, can you imagine a 4-year-old child?
So it really highlights the human cost of these policies.
Yeah, it seems like the pendulum has swung too far in the other direction.
Yeah.
You know, the initial response to the opioid crisis,
right,
while well-intentioned, may have created new problems,
yeah,
that are causing just as much, if not more, harm.
And Smith doesn't stop there.
No, he doesn't.
He also takes aim at the DEA and the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Accusing them of enforcing these, like, arbitrary limits,
mm-hmm,
on dosages.
Right.
Restricting what medications can be prescribed together.
Yeah.
And even disregarding a Supreme Court ruling.
Wow.
In the case of Ruan v. the United States,
mm-hmm,
which set a higher standard for prosecuting doctors for overprescribing.
So he's saying that they're not even following the law?
Yeah, basically he's saying you created this situation,
mm-hmm,
and now you're not even following the rules you're supposed to be following.
Yeah.
And he takes it even further.
He does.
He raises concerns about the Nuremberg Code.
Now, this is serious stuff.
Which is all about protecting people from medical experimentation without their consent.
So he's saying that by pushing these non-opioid treatments,
yeah,
without providing viable alternatives,
right,
the government is essentially experimenting on chronic pain patients.
That's a pretty heavy accusation.
It is.
Yeah. So after all that, what is Smith actually asking for?
Right. What does he want to see happen?
Right. He lays out a pretty extensive list of demands in his lawsuit.
Yeah. He's not holding back.
No. Starting with a complete withdrawal.
Wow.
Of the 2016 CDC guidelines.
That's a big ask.
Yeah. He wants them completely gone.
Completely gone. Wow.
Yeah. Arguing that they were based on flawed data,
mm-hmm,
and have caused more harm than good.
So he's calling for a pretty radical shift,
yeah,
in how we approach pain management in this country.
But that's not all.
No.
He also wants the government to create a system for tracking and documenting the negative impacts that opioid restrictions have had on patients.
So basically a way to collect data on the harm that's been done.
So we can actually see what's happening.
Exactly.
He's proposing something similar to the V-Nearer system, which is used to track adverse events related to vaccines. So it would be a website where patients could report any harm.
Any negative experiences.
They've experienced as a result of being denied or limited access.
To opioid medication.
To opioid medications.
Yeah, it's a really interesting idea.
I think that's a great idea.
Because right now we have these anecdotal stories.
Yeah.
The ones that Smith shares in his lawsuit.
Right.
But there's no real system in place to collect this kind of information in a comprehensive way.
Right. And if we have that information, then we can...
Then we can make more informed decisions about how to approach pain management in the future.
Yeah.
So a website like that could really paint a clearer picture of how these policies are impacting people on a larger scale.
And then there are his demands related to law enforcement.
Right. He wants the government to stop what he sees as the unjust prosecution of doctors who are simply trying to help their patients manage pain.
So he's basically saying that the DEA and the Department of Justice have been too aggressive.
Too aggressive, yeah.
In going after prescribers.
Right.
Often relying on flimsy evidence or biased expert witnesses.
To build their cases.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wants them to respect the Supreme Court's decision in Ruin v. the United States, which made it very clear that there needs to be a higher burden of proof when prosecuting doctors for overprescribing.
So they need to show that a doctor knowingly prescribed opioids outside the bounds of legitimate medical practice.
Right. It can't just be a matter of opinion or speculation. Yeah. It has to be clear that the doctor was acting in bad faith and not just trying to help their patients.
He's also calling for stronger protections for patient data, arguing that law enforcement shouldn't have unrestricted access to sensitive medical information.
It's a privacy issue.
Yeah.
And it's also a matter of trust. You know, if patients are worried that what they tell their doctor could be used against them, they might not be completely honest about their pain.
And that could lead to them not getting the proper treatment.
Exactly. And that could have serious consequences.
And lastly, he's demanding the creation of what he calls rescue clinics.
Rescue clinics, interesting. What are those?
So he envisions these specialized centers available across the country that could provide immediate care and support to patients who have been suddenly cut off from their pain medication.
So it's like an emergency room specifically for people who are experiencing this medical crisis to withdraw.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a pretty compassionate idea.
Yeah. It's a way of acknowledging that for some people, abruptly stopping these medications can be incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
Even life-threatening.
It's a recognition that these policies have real tangible effects on people's lives.
Yeah.
And they're trying to offer a safety net for those who are falling through the cracks.
So Smith's demands are definitely ambitious.
They are. He's not messing around.
No, he's challenging the status quo and asking for some pretty big changes in how we approach pain and addiction in this country.
He's really pushing us to rethink the way we do things. Yeah. And to consider the human cost of our policies.
It remains to be seen how his lawsuit will play out in the legal system.
It does. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
But one thing is for sure, he has raised some important questions.
Absolutely.
That deserve our attention.
He's shining a light on issues that have been hidden in the shadows for too long.
We'll be back after a short break to dig deeper into the potential implications of Smith's case.
And explore what some possible solutions might look like.
Stay tuned.
You know what really strikes me about this lawsuit is how it just sort of opens up this conversation that's been simmering for years.
Right.
You know, about how to find that balance in public health policies.
Right. How do we make sure that we're protecting people without causing like unintended harm?
Right.
It's like, you know, they say the cure can't be worse than the disease.
Oh, exactly. Right. And we've seen that happen before where a pendulum swings too far in one direction.
Right.
You know, it was like opioids for everyone at one point. And now we've got this intense crackdown. And it's leaving people who genuinely need these medications.
Right.
In agonizing pain.
Yeah. And Smith's lawsuit, I mean, whether he lives or loses.
Right.
It forces us to confront that.
It does.
It's like uncomfortable truth.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about opioids either.
No, it's not. It's about these bigger picture issues of, you know, well-intentioned policies that miss the mark because they don't account for
Yeah.
individual needs,
Right.
different medical situations, the importance of that doctor-patient relationship.
It's like you wouldn't use a hammer to fix a watch.
Right.
You know, sometimes you need like a.
Sometimes you need a more delicate tool.
Yeah.
Yeah, a more nuanced approach.
Right.
And think about that Emin chart we were talking
Oh,
about.
yeah.
You know, as you pointed out, way too simplistic.
Trying to take something so complex
Yeah.
and boil it down.
Boil down to a single number
Yeah.
doesn't work like that.
It's like diagnosing someone's whole health
Yeah.
based on their temperature alone. Yeah.
Exactly. You can't do it.
But that chart ended up being this like major factor
It did.
in policy decisions, you know?
Shaping how
Yeah.
people thought about dosage limits,
Right.
contributing to this idea that any opioid use above a certain level
Right.
is automatically risky.
Right. And that brings us to another point that Smith raises, which is the influence of prop,
Yeah.
you know, and more broadly, like the role of addiction specialists in shaping
Right.
opioid policy.
Right. Are they the right people to be
Yeah.
making these
So
decisions?
prop has been, you know, a huge force
They
in this
have.
whole conversation.
Absolutely.
And it's important to understand their perspective. But as we mentioned, you know, there are those allegations of conflicts of interest,
Right.
and their views on chronic pain, patients using opioids are pretty
Interesting
strong,
stuff.
to say the least.
To say the least, yeah, their stance has
Yeah,
definitely caused a lot of controversy.
we have.
Dr. Kolodny's statement that millions of people taking opioids for pain actually have opioid use disorder.
Yeah.
That's a pretty bold claim.
It is.
He's basically saying
Yeah.
that if you're taking opioids for pain and you experience withdrawal symptoms when you stop,
Yeah.
you automatically have a substance use disorder.
But like you said,
Right.
even some of the authors of the DSM-5 disagree with that.
Yeah, because it's important to distinguish between physical dependence and addiction.
Right.
You can become physically dependent on a lot of different medications. That doesn't mean you're addicted.
Right.
Addiction is characterized by,
Yeah.
you know, compulsive behaviors, negative consequences, despite knowing those consequences.
Continuing to use it even though it's causing harm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know,
It's a really tough question.
that it is.
Like, how do you accurately diagnose addiction
Right.
in someone who's taking opioids for a valid medical reason?
Yeah, because pain itself can affect
Right?
mood, behavior, sleep,
Yeah.
all sorts of things.
So how do you separate those effects from signs of addiction?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah, and we need
And we
more.
need solid scientific research to answer it, not
Opinion.
ideology,
Right.
not financial incentives. We need good science.
And if we're getting the diagnosis wrong, we're not helping anyone. We're
No.
just adding to the stigma
Yeah.
and making it harder
Making it harder for people with chronic
for
pain.
people with chronic pain to get the treatment that they need. Which
Exactly.
brings us back to that
Why, back to the
pain refugee crisis.
pain refugee crisis.
Yeah.
Doctors are terrified
Yeah.
of legal repercussions.
Right.
So many of them are simply avoiding prescribing opioids altogether.
It's like this tough situation. Like,
It
no one
is.
wants to be holding the hot potato of
Nobody wants to touch
an
me.
opioid prescription,
Yeah.
you know. But ultimately, it's the patients that are.
It's the patients who are
That's
suffering.
yeah.
And Smith's lawsuit
Yeah.
provides some really heartbreaking examples of
He
this.
does. He talks about people dying from uncontrolled pain after surgery,
Yeah.
children being denied pain relief,
It's awful.
patients being left to fend for themselves when their doctors refuse to treat them.
Yeah, it's a really grim picture.
Yeah, you have to wonder about the ethical implications, like if doctors have this duty of care
Yeah,
to their patients,
especially to those.
especially those with like complex and debilitating pain conditions.
Is it ethical to simply withdraw the only treatment that's
Yeah.
working for someone and say good luck finding something else,
Yeah.
especially when there aren't
Right, yeah.
readily available alternatives?
All
That's
right.
not medicine,
It's
that's
abandoned now.
abandonment.
Yeah, Smith's lawsuit really starts to feel like this like cry for help.
It
You
does,
know,
yeah.
not just for himself, but for like a whole population of people who are
Yeah.
being ignored and mistreated.
It's a call for a more balanced and compassionate approach to pain management, one that recognizes the limitations of current policies
Yeah.
and prioritizes patient well-being
Yeah.
while still addressing these public health goals.
So what do you think? Like, does
Yeah,
he
I
have a
know.
chance of winning this thing?
It's hard to say. You
Yeah.
know, he's up against some very powerful entities.
Yeah.
Legal battles can be
Yeah.
long and unpredictable, so, you know, it's really anyone's guess at this point.
But even if he doesn't win in court, he's already accomplished something pretty important, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's sparked a conversation. He's
Yeah.
brought these issues out into the open.
Yeah.
He's forced us to confront
Yeah.
the unintended consequences of the war on opioids.
And that's a victory in itself.
It is.
Sometimes the first step towards solving a problem It's just acknowledging that it exists.
Well said.
Yeah.
All right. So let's dive into the specifics of what Smith is demanding and what some potential solutions might look like.
Okay, let's do it. This lawsuit really does feel like a David and Goliath situation.
It does. One man taking on the entire U.S. government, armed with his own story and some legal arguments.
Yeah, but even David had his slingshot, right? So let's talk about what Smith's actually asking for with this lawsuit and what he hopes to achieve.
All right. So his main goal, as we've discussed, is a complete reversal of those 2016 CDC guidelines.
He wants those guidelines gone.
Gone, yeah.
He's arguing that they were based on faulty information and that they've caused just a tremendous amount of harm.
It's a bold move, for sure.
Yeah.
Those guidelines have become so ingrained in medical practice, in law enforcement, in how we approach pain management as a whole.
Right.
Retracting them would be...
Yeah, it'd be huge.
A huge shift.
Yeah, but Smith believes it's necessary.
He does.
To admit the mistakes that were made, to change course and to start fresh.
Yeah.
With a more, you know, nuanced, evidence-based approach to dealing with pain.
He's not just calling for tweaks.
Right.
He wants a complete overhaul.
He's also asking the government to create a system.
Right.
For tracking and documenting the negative consequences of these opioid restrictions, the harm that's been done.
So a way to actually measure the impact of these policies.
Yeah, he's suggesting a website.
Okay.
Something similar to the V-URIS system.
Right.
That's used to track adverse events related to vaccines. So it would allow patients to report any negative experiences they've had as a result of being denied or limited access to opioid medications.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Because right now we have these individual stories.
Right.
Like the ones that Smith shares in his lawsuit. But we don't have a central place to collect this information in a systematic way.
Right. A website like that could really give us a much clearer picture.
Oh, yeah. How widespread these problems are.
Yeah. How these policies are actually playing out in people's lives.
Exactly. And that data could be used to inform better policy decisions moving forward.
Yeah. So that, you know, in the future, when we're making decisions about pain management, we're doing it based on, you know,
on evidence.
Yeah. A more thorough understanding of the risks and the benefits.
It's about transparency and accountability.
What about his demands regarding law enforcement?
So he wants to see an end to what he considers to be the unfair targeting of doctors who are prescribing opioids to their patients for legitimate medical reasons.
So he's basically arguing that the DEA and the Department of Justice have been too aggressive.
Too aggressive, yeah.
In their pursuit of prescribers, often relying on weak evidence or potentially biased expert witnesses.
Yeah, to build their cases.
So he wants them to honor the Supreme Court ruling in Roe v. the United States.
Right, which set a much higher bar for proving that a doctor knowingly prescribed opioids outside the bounds of acceptable medical practice.
So it's not enough to just say, well, this doctor prescribed a lot of opioids.
Exactly.
They have to show that the doctor was actually acting in bad faith.
Like they were doing something wrong.
And not just trying to help their patients.
Right. It has to be more than just, you know, a difference of opinion or a matter of, you know, exceeding some arbitrary limit.
Right. And he's also calling for stronger protections for patient data. He believes that law enforcement shouldn't have this easy access to sensitive medical information.
It's a privacy issue.
It is.
It's a matter of trust. You know, if patients are worried that what they tell their doctor could be used against them, they might not be completely honest about their pain.
Right. And then that could lead to them not getting the proper treatment.
Exactly. It could really damage that doctor-patient relationship, which is so vital for effective treatment.
And then there's his final demand, which is the creation of these rescue clinics.
Rescue clinics. Yeah, we talked about those.
So he envisions these specialized centers set up across the country where patients who've been suddenly cut off from their pain medication can receive immediate care and support.
To help them manage those withdrawal symptoms.
Right. Almost like an emergency room.
Yeah.
Specifically for this kind of medical crisis.
It's a really compassionate solution.
Yeah. It's a recognition that for some people, suddenly stopping opioid medications can be incredibly dangerous.
Dangerous. Yeah. Even life-threatening.
Yeah. And he's offering a safety net.
A safety net. Yeah.
So Smith's demands are ambitious, to say the least.
Ambitious. Yeah. He's really asking for a pretty fundamental shift in how we think about and approach pain and addiction in this country.
It's hard to predict what will happen with this lawsuit.
It is. Legal battles are always unpredictable.
But whatever the outcome, he's brought these issues to the forefront.
He has. He started a conversation that I think desperately needed to happen.
The shining a light on the human cost.
Yeah, the human cost of this war on opioids.
Of the war on opioids, yeah. Which often gets lost in the focus on tackling this overdose crisis.
We can't forget about the people who are suffering.
Right, and he's pushing us to find a better way, a more balanced and humane approach.
A more compassionate approach.
That takes into account the needs of both patients and the public.
Yeah, he's asking us to really examine our values.
Yeah, has the cure become worse than the disease in some cases?
That's a question we all need to grapple with.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into this lawsuit, it's clear that even well-intentioned policies can have these unintended consequences.
Absolutely. The road to hell is paved with good intentions, as they say.
Smith's story reminds us to think critically about the choices we make in the name of public health.
Yeah.
And to ensure that those choices are informed by compassion and a deep understanding of these complex issues involved.
Well said.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
We'll be back next time with another exploration of a topic that matters.
Until then, keep learning and keep asking questions.
See you next time.